Welcome to Ask the Experts, where each week we talk to people in the industry to get the inside word on what's happening right now, what that means for the tactics you should use to make the most of your money. This week, I've partnered up with realestate.co.nz, who has kindly lent us their expert, Vanessa Williams, and we're talking about house versus apartment, the key differences between these properties and how it impacts your money and your strategy. Making Sense is partnered with realestate.co.nz to get you the info you need in today's market. Property hunting can be a bit of an emotional roller coaster with its fair share of stress. That's where realestate.co.nz comes in. They've been helping Kiwis buy, sell, and rent since 1996, and their app is designed to make it easier and faster. What sets them apart? Flexibility. Realestate.co.nz gives you so many ways to search and so much information to help you make decisions. Realestate.co.nz. Download the app today. Before we get into it, Making Sense is stoked to be supported by KiwiBank. We've teamed up to bring you insight directly from their people, the experts who live and breathe this stuff every day. It's not the outdated stuff that worked 5 years ago. It's what's happening right now in the industry to help you make the most of your money. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. Now, Vanessa, welcome back on. I've got to say, everyone's been loving your episodes so far, so it's so nice to have you back. Let's start with a house versus an apartment. I mean, there's, I think most of us have been into one, if not both of those, but what are the key characteristics when we're actually defining these property types?
Hey, look, thank you so much for having me back. I'm pleased that your listeners out there are enjoying the content. Now, this topic is really fascinates me. I think it's really interesting as well. So looking at the key differences, and what you've got to kind of think about here is, you're dead right, most of us have been into an apartment, and you'll know they're typically smaller. They're usually a unit within a bunch of other units, so more around shared spaces. At a very minimum, you're sharing a front door. At a sort of a quite a bougie sort of area, you might be sharing a pool or a gym or a sauna. And then when you're looking at a house, it's usually a standalone unit, but on a piece of land that you typically own. Now, there is a little bit of a hybrid of those, which most people will know as a townhouse. So that will be a property that's attached or to another property. So it might share a internal wall, but usually has their own front door. But the key thing that we're going to chat about today is really around that house or that standalone property on a piece of land versus a apartment. And I think probably what your listeners will be most interested in is then, what is that capital outlay and what does that sort of piece look like around the finances of the two?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you think about things like capital gain. I think that is the big one that a lot of people think about, want when it comes to a property. So that is, of course, how much a property goes up or down. You can have capital losses as well. We must never forget that. So is there a difference in how much values change over time when we're looking at these different property types?
Yeah. So what we've got to think about is, there's a couple of elements here. Now, the first thing you want to think about is, you've got to firstly get into that property, right? So that capital outlay or that amount of deposit that you are going to need is going to be smaller for the likes of an apartment, because typically they are more cost effective or a lower price point than a house with a piece of land. And so that's a really key piece to think about, because if you look at the average asking price for a apartment, and just hot off the press, it's around $740,000 at the moment in the New Zealand market. So if you're looking at a 20% deposit of that, you know, that's quite a lot less than if you were looking to go straight into a house, which, now looking at the average asking price of standalone houses, they're around $870,000. So there's quite a big delta there between, you know, getting in and out. Now, that is a great question around, so do houses and apartments move at the same rate? Now, I had a wee look into this, and if you have listened to our previous episode around how often do people change houses, and spoiler alert, it's around 5.5 years. I went back to 5.5 years ago and went, okay, well, what was the average asking price of an apartment and what was the average asking price of a house and how much has that grown over that period of time. So that will give you a little bit of an indication on your capital gain over that time. So looking at those lovely homes, about 5.5 years ago, you were looking to outlay around $650,000. Now, that almost seems crazy now, the way that prices are.
I know. Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't that be lovely? But looking at that growth rate, that's around a 33% growth rate over 5.5 years, which for any investment is pretty phenomenal, right? So then taking a look at the apartment market. Now, 5.5 years ago, you would have had to outlay around $590,000. So that growth rate from 590 to around 740 is about 25%. So the growth rate isn't quite as high. And usually that is because the value in land is what is going up. So there is that's kind of where you look at that capital gains. Now, I'm not going to lie, a 25% growth rate over 5.5 years is certainly not a bad investment.
Still good.
Absolutely. And in that time as well, I would recommend looking at how much you might have paid in additional interest over that extra money you would have had to have borrowed should you have chosen a house over an apartment. So there's a few kind of metrics you want to look at there, but to give you a bit of a top level, they both grow quite healthily, but houses will grow at a greater rate typically than an apartment will.
Okay, so recap there of that fabulous information you've pulled together for us. So an apartment is likely to be less money up front, but it's also likely to grow a little bit less in value, and we're thinking that that comes down to the amount of land that's attached to the property. Because of course, and this is, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because you absolutely read my mind on bringing up that issue, because I've been told before that what's actually valuable when you're buying property is not so much the house. The house is great and all means you can live there, but it's the land. So when you're looking at an apartment block, now, depends what type of apartment you're buying. It could be six, it could be 600. Who knows how big the building is? But of course, you're splitting up that land underneath the property with everyone else who's buying the apartment. So is that the issue there of why it doesn't grow as much? Because you're basically splitting that land and that land growth underneath you.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. It ends up you owning almost a postage stamp size piece of land that you are, if you've got 600 apartments perhaps in that particular building, versus you can physically see the land typically. And when you are purchasing a standalone house, you're typically walking up a driveway, which may or may not be shared. That's also a pretty common piece will happen across New Zealand, is that sometimes we share driveways. But majority of the time when you're buying a piece of a home that's on a piece of land, you're buying all of that land that you can see. And you know, you'll get that within documentation when you're purchasing a house. But yes, you're right as well that land is very valuable. And look, that can also fluctuate as well. So if you think about the local council, well, they can actually open up a whole bunch of land and go, right, we're going to build all these subdivisions and apartments out here, and we're going to increase the supply of property at a really rapid rate. And what that means is that perhaps the land around that big area that's just opened up might not grow as fast as some land that's, say, in the centre city, because again, supply has opened up. So there has been a lot more that is available. So that might change in the way in which land will grow. But you're dead right. That's what we see as the valuable piece here in property in New Zealand.
Let's go into that point a bit more, because you raise a really good point there in terms of the area and what's happening around you. Do we see differences based on where the house or apartment is? Because, I mean, an example that springs to mind is an apartment in the center of a big city, I imagine, is always hot property. Surely there's always people wanting to live there. But how much does it change with where you are and what's happening around you, and what do you look for?
Yeah, so what we've got to think about is in the apartment market, there's actually very few listings that come onto the market every month. So I had a look right across the Motu, and in Auckland, around about 250 apartments come onto the market every month. Now, to put that into context, right across New Zealand, our total new listing numbers are around 8,000 or 9,000. So to have only 250 on average over the last 12 months come onto the market in Auckland In Wellington, less again, it's around 60 a month.
Wow.
And then in Christchurch is around 20. So you think for the major centres, we actually have a very low amount of stock that is available, or homes or apartments, I should say, for people to actually look at. So yes, they are very sought after, I would say, in that very centre city. But for a population of 5.5 million, to only have around 250 apartments for those people within the, in, you know, Auckland city centre, you know, that's also quite, you know, there's not heaps of them out there. So yes, you're right, location does have a big part to play with where these homes are, whether they are an apartment or a house, but it also has a little bit to do with the lifestyle that you want as well. If you have the ability to work from home, or, you know, you're out in the centre suburbs and you maybe only have to come into the city once a week or not at all, you know, that can be something that's a lot more interesting to you and something that you would value versus being closer in the city, pay more money, potentially have much less land or an apartment, but be happy to pop down to the local dairy or wherever you're off to go.
If you're looking for property, start with realestate.co.nz, New Zealand's longest standing property site. They've been dedicated exclusively to property since 1996. That's even before Google. Whether you're buying or renting, no other property site gives you as much information. The Market Insights feature lets you view the median asking, sale and rental prices in a suburb for over 1, 3, or even 10 years. Want to know what a property is worth? The estimated sale price range uses the latest sales figures from the real estate industry. Scroll to the bottom of a property listing to discover what it sold for in the past, the council valuation, and what you can expect to pay for it even before you view it. Become the property expert. Download the realestate.co.nz app and make informed decisions fast. Life is full of ups and downs, so no matter what your everyday looks like, KiwiBank has the tools to help you manage your money your way. To find out more, head to kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi.
The lifestyle factors, this is always the tricky thing when we're talking about property, isn't it? Because the lifestyle factors with it are huge. It's never just dollars and cents. When I think about my lifestyle when I was younger and I was an entire workaholic and would just have happily have been in an apartment in the center of town, walk down to work, walk back, go out, enjoy the nightlife, back to work the next day, versus what I'm doing now where I have two kids and I like having some space outside for them to play on their bikes and there's horses next door. Don't think you're going to get that in Auckland Central unless you've got some really rich neighbors. You know, the lifestyle factors of this hugely impact the supply and demand as well, right? And that's intangible and a little more difficult to put numbers around.
Yes, and I absolutely agree with that. And I think that this last, you know, they say never waste a crisis, and I don't think we should waste COVID. I think we all learned a lot around that, especially what does my lifestyle look like? What do I want that work life, spending my weekends mowing lawns versus not mowing lawns or just watering my plants? And like, what does that all look like for somebody? And I think you're dead right. That's the intangible piece at an individual level. That's sometimes why, you know, we get into the auction room or we go and chat to real estate agents and we actually do buy with our heart more so than our head. As much as we try and buy with our head, you know, there is that element of what does our lifestyle look like? What do we want our lives to be? And, you know, it's about finding the life you want to live, and property is a huge part of that.
Yeah. I remember talking to an investor once who said they weren't so worried if they were in an auction room and recognized other investors there, because they were all just quite clinically hoping to get the lowest price possible, versus when they could tell there were first home buyers in the room, they'd get a bit nervous, because first home buyers often get really emotionally attached to the house, will bid the price up more and bid it higher than the investor wants to go. So it's quite funny on those factors, isn't it? I mean, we've talked a lot about capital gains so far, and I'd love to know, do you have any numbers in terms of what we're talking with rents? Because the other thing is, of course, as I say, some people are investors. Some people are buying these houses to rent them out and make money that way. Is there a difference in terms of how much you can make from a house versus an apartment?
This is quite a tricky one because it does really depend, as you have said previously, on where is that location and also what are the amenities available for those pieces. So when you're looking at an apartment block that has got a spa and a sauna and has two bedrooms and two bathrooms and includes a car park, you are really looking at the ability, the type of lifestyle, as we go back to, of someone who might want to rent that out is quite different than, say, a much smaller apartment, less amenities that perhaps might suit someone like a student that's really is around the cost per, you know, cost per week for rent. So it really does depend on the apartment market by location, absolutely, but also really the amenities on what that building has to offer and what type of tenant you will then attract to that particular place indeed. Now, looking at houses, now what we see here is that there's many different reasons as to why people rent, but some of the more interesting ones are people will move into a school zone. So if they're looking to have their children in a school, say in Auckland, it might be a grammar. They might want to be send their children to a grammar school. And so they might look to move or rent in that area. And that's quite a different motivator than, right, there's a four-bedroom home. I can rent it out with me and three of my girlfriends and we're living in there because we're students or we just come out of uni or things like that. So there, it really depends on doing your numbers around what is that capital outlay and understanding for your particular building or type of house, what are the average rents in your area given what you are purchasing. So it's quite an individual piece. It's hard to sort of say at a top level, but I would absolutely recommend that you think about exactly that, the capital outlay versus the amount of money you can get a week to week per rent. Now, those will be quite different if you are looking for a investment that is going to get you more income on a weekly basis versus you might have a really lovely outlay. It's not going to get you as much rent, but because it's such a desirable property, you're going to get capital gains and much better. So it's just about understanding those two pieces and working with experts to help you understand those.
Yeah, I mean, no rule of thumb applies to everything equally, but I have often been told that there are income properties where you might earn a bit more off them, but you're not expecting to get as much of a value increase. And there can often also be capital gain properties where they maybe you have to put so much into them, it's hard to make that money back on rent. But you're looking and thinking this is going to grow more over time. Obviously, those are very generic rules of thumb, but that is something I've been told before by investors that things tend to fall into one of those two camps.
Yeah, I've also heard that as well, and I would agree with you on that. And I think that that's, again, about going, well, what lifestyle am I in at the moment? Am I looking to get an income off this property and therefore I do need a low outlay but a high yield? Or actually, am I in this for the next 10, 15 years? I've still got a good chunk of my career to go. I can sit and hold on to this. So again, back to that lifestyle, what is it that you are wanting? And then working with those experts. But I hear you as well. There's two schools of thought that I hear as well.
Yeah, and we should dive into that another time. But obviously, we're running up on time at the moment. But are there exceptions to any of the rules we've talked about at the moment? Because as I've just said, you know, everything is a general rule of thumb when we're talking here. Are there any obvious exceptions, things that could change some of the things we've talked about so far?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the one thing I would always go to, but I get asked a lot about, is what about leasehold apartments? So what that means is that postage size stamp piece of land that you might get on a typical apartment, if it's what's called a freehold apartment, well, you don't even get that when you buy a leasehold. You are literally just physically buying the unit that is encompassed within the bigger building. Now, that the reason that's an exception to the rule is typically the outlay on those is far, far less than a house or a freehold apartment. So you might be searching on realestate.co.nz and say, wow, this apartment's only $250,000 and it's right outside Spark Arena. Amazing. Great. But what you will find is that you only physically own the building and that there is effectively a rent or a lease that you have to purchase for your property to be on that land. You don't own it. You're leasing it or renting it off somebody else. So again, look into all of those costs, understand how long that lease is. And hey, look, you might be really comfortable with that and go, actually, for me to have an apartment outside Spark Arena for 250,000 of you that I'm not going to get any capital gain, or maybe might even lose some of that capital, but I could rent it out for $1,000 a week. Actually, I'm totally fine with that. So, you know, there are some exceptions to the rules like that, and that would be a area where you definitely get capital. You would get an increase in the weekly income from that property, far outweighs the capital outlay. But just be mindful about those pieces. That's probably an exception to the rule. That's an interesting one to look into, but certainly do your DD on that one.
Absolutely. Yeah, leasehold is a really interesting one. Super controversial amongst various people. Some people love them, get a lot of people hating on them. Because as you say, it is, you're basically renting the ground underneath your feet. Now that can go for, it can be a 100-year lease on that. Your apartment isn't going to get knocked over or anything like that. But it can also be the price of that lease, the price of the rent of the ground can change. So you want to read that contract front to back. You want to get your lawyer involved. You want to be super clear on what you're signing up to and for how long. That's a really important one to check too, right?
Yes, absolutely. Because as you said, if it's a 100-year lease and you're 30 years in, you kind of go, well, 70 years, I'm comfortable with that. But if you look at it, it's a 100-year lease and it actually ends in 5 years, well, the chance of, you know, you being able to sell that property might be really, really short, because, you know, most people want to make sure they've got a bit more certainty in property. Typically, as we said, there's always exceptions to the rules though.
Exceptions to all of them. Well, hey, thank you so much for laying that out for us. Vanessa Williams from realestate.co.nz, giving us the inside word there on apartments versus houses. Super interesting. Now, I've had a lot of questions come through from you guys in my DMs about this. I've included as many of them as I can in this episode. But if you have more on this, anything else to do with money, send them through. Vanessa is great at digging out the stats, the facts, the figures for us, and we can get to those in a future episode for you. So you can find me Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Frances Cook NZ. Send me those questions there. Also, heaps more money content on there for you. Don't forget to subscribe to Making Sense so that you get even more tips and tricks with your money. And until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.